This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Drunken Fireworks, a story by Stephen King. Read by Tim Sample.
Statement given by Mr. Alden McCausland, Castle County Police Department. Statement taken by Police Chief Andrew Clutterbuck. Arresting Officer Ardell Benoit also present. 11:15 a.m. to 1:20 p.m., July 5th, 2015.
Yes, you could say. Mind me, did a good deal of drinking and lounging around out to camp after Daddy died. No law against it, is there? If you don't get behind the wheel, that is, and we never did. We could afford it, too, because by then we were what you might call the idle rich. Never would have expected that, Dad being a carpenter all his life. Called himself a skilled carpenter, and Ma always added, barely skilled and mostly distilled. That was her little joke. Ma worked down to Royce Flowers over on Castle Street, but only full-time in November and December. A dab hand at those Christmas wreaths she was, and not bad when it came to funeral arrangements, either. She did Dad, you know. Had a nice yellow ribbon on it that said, "How we love thee." Almost biblical, don't you think? People cried when they saw it, even ones Dad owed money to. When I got out of high school, I went to work at Sonny's Garage, balancing wheels, doing oil changes, and fixing flats. Back in the old days, I used to pump gas, but, of course, now that's all DIY. I also sold some pot, might as well admit it. Haven't done it for years, so I guess you can't charge me on that. But in the 80s, that was a pretty good cash-and-carry business, especially in these parts. Always had enough jingle to go out stepping on Friday or Saturday night. I enjoy the company of women, but have stayed away from the altar, at least so far. I guess if I have any ambitions, one would be to see the Grand Canyon, and another would be to stay what they call a lifelong bachelor. Less problems that way. Besides, I got to keep an eye on Ma. You know what they say, a boy's best friend is his... I will get to the point, Ardell, but if you want it, you have to let me tell it my own way. If anyone should have a little sympathy for telling the whole story, it's you. When we was in school together, you wouldn't shut up. Tongue hung in the middle and running at both ends, Mrs. Fitch used to say. Remember her? Fourth grade? What a cad she was. Remember the time you put gum in the toe of a shoe? Where was I? Camp, right? Out on Abenaki Lake. Ain't nothing but a three-room cabin with a lick of beach and an old dock. Daddy bought it in 91, I think it was, when he run into a little dividend from some job. That wasn't enough for the down payment, but when I added in the income from my herbal remedies, we was able to swing it. The place is pretty skeevy, though. I'm willing to admit that. Ma called it the Mosquito Bowl. We never fixed it up worth a tin shit. But Daddy kept to the payments pretty regular. When he missed, Ma and me chipped in. She bitched about giving away her flower money, but never too hard. She liked going out there from the first, bugs, leaky roof and all. We'd sit out on the deck, have a picnic lunch, watch the world go by. Even then, she wouldn't say no to a six-pack or a bottle of coffee brandy, although in those days she kept her drinking mostly to the weekends. The place was all paid off around the turn of the century, and why not? It was on the town side of the lake, the west side, and you both know what it's like over there. All reedy and shallow, plenty of pucker brush. The east side's nicer, them big houses. The summer people have to have. And I imagine they looked across the slums on our side, all shacks and cabins and trailer homes, and told themselves it was a shame how the locals had to live without so much as a tennis court to their names. Well, they could think whatever they wanted. Far as we was concerned, we're as good as anybody. Dad'd fish a little off the end of the dock, and Ma would cook what he caught on the wood stove, and after 01, or maybe it was 02, we had the running water and no longer had to trot to the outhouse in the middle of the night. Good as anybody. We thought there'd be a little more money for fixing up once the place was paid off, but there never seemed to be. The way it disappeared was a mystery, because back then there were plenty of bank loans for people who wanted to build, and Daddy was working regular. When he died of a heart attack while on a job in Harlow in 02, that was, Ma and me thought we was pretty well skint.
"We'll get by, though," she said. "And if it was Hawes he was spending the extra on, I don't want to know."
But she said we'd have to sell the place on Abenaki if we could find somebody crazy enough to buy it.
"We'll get showing it next spring," she said, "before the black flies hatch out. That okay with you, Alden?"
I said it was, and even went to work sprucing it up. Got as far as new shingles, and replacing the worst of the rotted boards on the dock, and that's when we had our first stroke of luck. Ma got a call from an insurance company down to Portland, and found out why there never seemed to be any extra money, even after the cabin and the 2 acres it stood on was paid off. It wasn't Hawes. Dad had been putting the extra into life insurance. Maybe he had what you call a premonition. Stranger things happened in the world every day, like rains of frogs or two-headed cat I seen down at the Castle County Fair. Gave me nightmares, it did, or that Loch Ness monster. Whatever it was, we had $75,000 that we never expected just drop out of the sky and into our key bank account. That was stroke of luck number one. 2 years after that call, 2 years almost to the day, here come stroke of luck number two. Ma was in the habit of buying a $5 scratch-off ticket once a week after she got her groceries at Normie's Super Shop. For years she'd been doing that and never won more than $20. Then one day in 04, she matched 27 below to 27 above on a big Main Million scratcher, and holy Christ on a bike, she seen that match was worth $250,000. "I thought I was going to pee my pants," she said. They put a picture in the window of the super shop. Well, you remember that. It was there for 2 months at least. A cool quarter million. More like $120,000 after all the taxes was paid, but still, we invested it in Sunny Oil because Ma said oil was always going to be a good investment, at least until it was gone, and we'd be gone by the time it was. I had to agree with that, and it turned out fine. Those were go-go years in the stock market, as you may remember, and that's when we commenced our life of leisure. It's also when we got down to serious drinking. Some of it we'd done at the house in town, but not that much. You know how neighbors love to gossip. It wasn't until we were mostly shifted out to the mosquito bowl that we really went to work on it. Ma quit the flower shop for good in 09, and I said toodaloo to patching tires and replacing mufflers a year or so later. After that, we didn't have much reason to live in town, at least until cold weather. No furnace out to the lake, you know. By 2012, when our trouble with those dagos across the lake started, we'd roll on out there a week or two before Memorial Day and stay until Thanksgiving or so. Ma put on some weight, 150 pounds, give or take. I guess a lot of that was down to the coffee brandy. They don't call it fat ass in a glass for nothing. But she said she was never the Miss America type to begin with, or even Miss Maine.
"I'm a cuddly kind of gal," she liked to say.
What Doc Stone liked to say, at least until she stopped going to him, was that she was going to be a dying young kind of gal if she didn't quit drinking the Allens.
"You're a heart attack waiting to happen, Hallie," he said. "Or cirrhosis. You've already got type 2 diabetes. Isn't that enough for you? I can give it to you in words of one syllable. You need to dry out. Then you need AA.
"Phew," Ma said when she got back. "After a scolding like that, I need a drink. What about you, Alden?" I said I could use one, so we took our lawn chairs out the end of the dock, as we most often did, and got royally schnockered while we watched the sun go down. Good as anyone, and better than many. And look here, something's going to kill everyone. Am I not right? Doctors have a way of forgetting that, but Ma knew. "The macrobiotic son of a bitch is probably right," she said as we tottered back to the cabin along about 10 this was, and both of us bit to shit in spite of the deep we'd slathered ourselves in. "But at least when I go, I'll know I lived. And I don't smoke. Everybody knows that's the worst. Not smoking should keep me going for a while, but what about you, Alden? What are you going to do after I die and the money runs out?"
"Well, I don't know," I said. "I sure would like to see the Grand Canyon."
She laughed and tossed an elbow in my ribs and said,
"That's my boy. You'll never get a stomach ulcer with that attitude. Now let's get some sleep."
Which we did. Waking up around 10 the next day and starting to medicate our hangovers along about noon with muddy rudders. I didn't worry as much about Ma as the doc did. I figured she was having too much fun to die. As it happened, she outlived Doc Stone, who got killed one night by a drunk driver on Pigeon Bridge. You could call that irony, or tragedy, or just the way life goes. Me? I ain't no philosopher. I was just glad the doc didn't have his family with him, and I hope his insurance was paid up. All right, that's the background. Now here's where we get down to business. The Massimos. And that fucking trumpet, pardon my fancy.
I call it the 4th of July arms race. And although it didn't really get up and running till 2013, it really started the year before. The Massimos had the place directly across from us. Big white house with pillars and a lawn running down the beach, which was pure white sand instead of gravel like ours. That place must have had a dozen rooms, 20 or more if you count the guest cottage. They called it 12 Pines Camp, on account of the fir trees that was around the main house and kind of closed it in. A camp? Sonny Jesus, that place was a mansion. And yes, they had a tennis court, also badminton, and a place on the side for throwing horseshoes. They'd come out near the end of June and stay until Labor Day, and then close the son of a bitch up. A place that size, and they let it stand empty 9 months out of every 12. I couldn't believe it. Ma could, though. She said we were accident rich, but the Massimos were real rich.
"Only those are ill-gotten gains, Alden," she said. "And I'm not talking about no quarter-acre pot patch either. Everyone knows Paul Massimo is connected."
She always said it just like that, in big capital letters.
Supposedly, the money came from Massimo Construction. I looked it up on the internet, and it appeared as legal as could be. But they were Italian, and Massimo Construction was based in Providence, Rhode Island. And your cops, you can connect them dots. As Ma always used to say, when you put two and two together, you never get five. They used all the rooms in the big white house when they were there, I'll say that much, and the ones in the guest cottage as well. Ma used to look across the water and toast them with her sombrero or muddy rudder and say, "Massimo's come cheaper by the dozen." They knew how to have fun, I'll give them that.
There were cookouts and water tag and teenage kids driving those jet skis around. They must have had a half a dozen of those babies in colors so bright they'd burn your eyes if you looked at them too long. In the evenings, they'd play touch football, usually enough Massimos to make two regulation teams of 11 each. And then, when they got too dark to see the ball, they'd sing. You could tell by the way they yelled out their songs, often in Italian, they enjoyed a drink of three themselves. One of them had a trumpet, and he'd blow it along with the song. Just wah, 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 enough to make your eyes water.
Dizzy Gillespie, he ain't, Ma said. Someone ought to dip that trumpet in olive oil and stick it up his ass. He could fart out God Bless America.
Long about 11, he'd blow taps. That'd be it for the night. I'm not sure any of the neighbors would have complained, even if the singing and the trumpet had gone on until 3 in the morning, not when most of the folks on our side of the lake believed he was the real-life Tony Soprano. Come the 4th of July that year, this is 012 I'm talking about, I had some sparklers, 2 or 3 packets of Black Cat firecrackers, and a couple of cherry bombs. I bought them from Pop Anderson at Anderson's Cherry Flea Market on the road to Oxford.
That ain't tattling, neither.
Not unless you're bone stupid, and I know neither you is. Hell, everybody knew you'd get firecrackers at the Cherry Flea. The little stuff was all Pop would ever sell, because back then fireworks was against the law. Anyway, all those Massimos was running around across the lake, playing football and tennis and giving each other swimsuit wedgies. The little ones paddling around the shore, the bigger ones diving off their float. Me and Ma was out the end of the dock in our lawn chairs, feeling no pain with our patriotic supplies laid out beside us. As dusk came down, I give her a sparkler, lit it, then lit mine off in hers. We waved 'em around in the gloaming. Pretty soon, the little ones over there on the other side seen 'em and started clamoring for their own. The two older Massimo boys handed 'em out, and they waved 'em back at us. Their sparklers was bigger and longer-lasting than ours, and the heads had been treated with some sort of chemical and made 'em go all different colors, while ours were only yellow-white. The dago with the trumpet blew wah, wah, as if to say, "This is what real sparklers look like."
"That's okay," Ma said. "The sparklers may be bigger, but let's shoot some firecrackers, see how they like that."
We lit 'em one by one, then tossed 'em so they'd bang and flash before they hit the lake. The kids over there at 12 Pines seen that and started clamoring again. So some of the Massimo men went into the house, come back with a carton. It was full of firecrackers. Pretty soon the bigger kids were lighting them off a pack at a time. They must have a couple hundred packs in all, and they went off like machine gun fire, which made ours seem pretty tame.
"Wah, wah,"
went the trumpet, as if to say, "Try again."
"Well, sugar tit," Ma said. "Give me one of them cherry bumpers you've been holding back, Alden."
"All right," I said. "But you be careful, Ma. You've had a few, and you might still like to see all your fingers tomorrow morning."
"Just give one over and don't be smart," she said. "I didn't fall off a hayrick yesterday, and I don't like the sound of that trumpet. I bet they don't have any of these, 'cause Pop don't sell 'em to Flatlanders. He sees a license plate and claims he's all out."
I gave her one and lit it with my Bic. The fuse sparked, and she threw it high in the air. It went with a flash bright enough to hurt our eyes, and the bang echoed all the way down the lake. I let the other one and flung it like Roger Clemens. Bang!
"There," Ma says. "Now they know who's boss."
But then Paul Massimo and his two oldest sons walked down to the end of their dock. One of them, big, handsome young fella in a rugby shirt, had that goddamn trumpet in a kind of holster thing on his belt. They waved to us. Then the old man handed each of the boys something. They held the somethings out so he could light the fuses. They flang 'em out over the lake, and holy God, not bang, but boom! Two booms, loud as dynamite, and big white flashes. Those ain't cherry bombs, I said. Them are M-80s. Where'd they get those? Ma asked. Pop don't sell those. We looked at each other. Didn't even have to say it. Rhode Island. You could probably get anything in Rhode Island. At least if your name was Massimo, you could. The old man handed each of them another and lit 'em up. Then he lit one of his own. Three booms loud enough to scare every fish in Abenaki up to the north end, I have no doubt. Then Paul waved to us, and the fellow with the trumpet drew it out of his holster like a six-gun and blew three long blasts. Wah, wah, wah. As if to say, sorry about that, you poor-ass Yankees. Better luck next year. Wasn't nothing we could do about it, neither. We had another pack of black cats, but they would have sounded pretty lackluster after those M-80s. And over on the other side, that pack of Dagos was applauding and cheering, the girls jumping up and down in their bikini suits. Pretty soon they started singing God Bless America. Ma looked at me, and I looked at Ma. She shook her head, and I shook mine. Then she said, next year. Yes, I said, next year. She held up her glass. We were drinking Bucket Lux that night, as I recall, and I raised mine. We drank to victory in 013, and that was how the 4th of July arms race began. Mostly, I think it was that fucking trumpet. Pardon my Francais. The following June, I went to Pop Anderson and explained my situation. Told him how I felt the honor of us on the west side of the lake had to be upheld.
Well, Alden, he said, I dunno what shooting off a bunch of gunpowder has to do with honor, but business is business. And if you come back in a week or so, I might have something for you.
I did just that. He took me into his office and put a box on his desk. Had a bunch of Chinese characters on it.
This is the stuff I ordinarily don't sell, he said. But me and your ma goes all the way back to grammar school together, where she spelled me by the wood stove, helped me learn my times tables. I got you some big bangers. They call M120s. There's not much bigger in the loud noise department unless you want to start tossing sticks of dynamite. Then there's a dozen of these. He brought out a cylinder sitting on top of a red stick. That looks like a bottle rocket, I said, only bigger.
Yeah, you could call this the deluxe model, he said. They're called Chinese peonies. They shoot twice as high, then make a hell of a flash. Some red, some purple, some yellow. You stick 'em in a Coke or a beer bottle, just like with ordinary bottle rockets. But you want to stand well back, because the fuses are going to fizz sparks all over the place when they lift off. Keep a towel handy so you don't start any brush fires.
Well, that's great, I said. They won't be blowing no trumpet when they see those.
I'll sell you the whole box for $30, Pop said. I know that's dear. I also throwed in some black cats and a few Twizzlers. Stick those in chunks of wood and send them off floating. Awful pretty they are.
Say no more, I told him. It'll be cheap at twice the price.
Alden, he said, you never want to talk that way to a feller in my line of work.
I took him back to camp. And Ma was so excited, she wanted to set off one of the M-120s and one of the Chinese peonies right away. I didn't often put my foot down with Ma. She was apt to bite it right off your ankle. But I did that time. Give those Massimos half a chance and they'll come up with something better, I said. She thought it over, then kissed me on the cheek and said, You know, for a boy who barely finished high school, you've got a head on your shoulders, Alden.
So here come the glorious fourth of Old 13. The whole Massimo clan was gathered over to 12 Pines like usual. Must have been 24 or more. And me and Ma was out the end of our dock in our lawn chairs. We had our box of goodies set down between us, along with a good-sized pitcher of orange driver. Pretty soon, Paul Massimo come out the end of his dock with his own box of goodies, which was a bit bigger than ours, but that didn't concern me. It ain't the size of the dog in the fight, you know, but the size of the fight in the dog. His two grown boys was with him. They waved, and we waved back. Dusk commenced, and me and Ma started shooting off black cats. Not one by one this time, but by the pack. The little kids did the same over on their side. When they got tired of that, they lit up their big sparklers and waved them around. The sun, with the trumpet, blew a couple of times, kind of tuning up. A bunch of the younger ones heard it and come out on the 12 Pines dock, and after some talk, Paul and his grown boys handed each of them a big gray ball that I recognize as M-80s. Sound carries across the lake real well, especially when there's no breeze, and I could hear Paul telling the little ones to be careful and demonstrating how they was to chuck 'em out into the lake. Then Massimo lit 'em up. Three of those kids threw high, wide, and handsome like they was supposed to, but the youngest couldn't have been more than 7, wound up like Nolan friggin' Ryan and chucked his right on the dock between his feet. It bounced and would have blown his nose off if Paul hadn't yanked him back. Some of the women screamed, but Massimo and his boys just fell down laughing. I judge they might have had more than a few shots. Wine, most likely, because that's what those dagos like to drink.
All right, Ma said. Enough frigging around. Let's show 'em up before that tall one starts honking his goddamn horn.
So I took out a couple of M120s, which were black and looked like the bombs you sometimes see in those old-time cartoons, the ones a villain uses to blow up the railroad tracks and gold mines and such.
You be careful, Ma, I said. Hold on to something like this too long, and you'd lose more than just your fingers. Don't you worry about me, she said. Let's show those spaghetti eaters. So I lit 'em, and we threw 'em, and kapow, one after the other. Enough to rattle windows all the way to Waterford, I should judge. Mr. Hornblower froze with his trumpet halfway to his lips. Some of the little kids started to cry. All the women ran down the beach to see what was going on, if it was terrorists or what.
"Let's get 'em,"
Ma said, and she toasted to young Mr. Hornblower standing over there with his trumpet in his hand and his thumb up his ass. Not really, you know, but in a manner of speaking. Paul Massimo and his two sons walked back to the end of their dock. And there they huddled, like a bunch of baseball players when the bases are loaded. Then they all walked up the house together. I thought they was finished, and Ma was sure of it. So we lit up our Twizzlers, just to celebrate. I'd cut squares of styrofoam from some packing material I found in the swill bucket out back of the cabin, and we stuck 'em in those and pushed 'em out on the water. By then it was that deep purple time. It comes just before a full dark. Awful gorgeous. With the wishing star up there in the sky and all the others ready to peep out. Neither day nor night. And always the prettiest time there is. That's what I think. And them Twizzlers, they was a lot more than pretty. They was beautiful. Floating out there, all red and green, waxing and waning like candle flames, and reflecting on the water. It was quiet again, too. So quiet you could hear the thumps of the fireworks show getting started over to Bridgeton Way. Plus, frogs started to croak again along the shoreline. The frogs thought all the noise and ruckus was over for the night. Little did they know,
because just then Paul and his two grown boys come back down to that dock and looked across at us. Paul had something in his hand almost as big as a softball, and the grown boy without the trumpet, which made him the smarter of the two, in my opinion, lit him up. Massimo didn't waste time but slang it underhand, high above the water, and before I could tell Ma to cover her ears, it went off. Holy Jesus, the flash seemed to blot out the whole sky, and the blast was as loud as an artillery shell. This time, it wasn't just a Massimo women and girls who came to see, but damn near everybody on the lake. And although half of them probably pissed their pants when that fucker went off, they were applauding. Do you believe that? Ma and me looked at each other, because we knew what was coming next. And it surely did. Captain Hornblower raised his fucking trumpet and blew it at us one long blast. All the Massimos laughed and applauded some more, and so did everyone else on both sides of the water. It was humiliating. You can understand that, can't you, Andy? Adele? We'd been out-exploded by a bunch of eye-tie flatlanders from Rhode Island. Not that I don't like a plate of spaghetti myself from time to time, but every day, get out. All right, fine, Ma said, squaring her shoulders. Maybe they can outbang us, but we got those Chinese peonies. Let's see how they like those. But I could see on her face that she felt they might get the best of us there, too. I set up a dozen beer and soda cans on the end of our dock and slipped one of the peonies into each one. The Massimo menfolk over on the other side stood watching us. Then the one who didn't think he could play the trumpet run back the house for fresh ammunition. Meanwhile, I ran my lighter along the fuses, neat as you please, and the Chinese peonies took off, one after the other, with nary a malfunction. Awfully pretty they were, even though they didn't last long. All the colors of the rainbow, just like Pop promised. There were oohs and ahs from some of the Massimos, I'll give them that. And then the young man who ran away come back from his errand with another box. Turned out it was full of fireworks that were like our Chinese peonies, only bigger. Each one had its own little cardboard launching pad. We could see because by then there was lights on at the end of the Massimo dock, kind of shaped like torches, only electric. Paul lit those rockets and up they went, making golden starbursts in the sky that was twice as big and bright as ours. They twinkled and made crackling machine gun noises when they came down. Everybody applauded even more. And, of course, me and Ma had to do the same, or we'd be thought of as poor sports. And the trumpet blew. Wah, wah, wah. Later on, after we'd shot off all our shit, Ma went stomping around the kitchen in her nightgown and tartan slippers, steam practically shooting out of her ears. "Where'd they get armaments like that?" she asked, but it was what you call a rhetorical question. She didn't give me time to answer. "From his hoodlum friends back in Rhode Island, that's where, because he's connected. And he's one of those people who got to win at everything. You can tell just looking at him." "Sort of like you, Ma," I thought, but did not say. Sometimes silence really is golden, and never more than when your ma's loaded on Alan's coffee brandy and madder than a wet hen. "And I hate that friggin' trumpet. I hate it with a purple passion." I could agree with her there, and did. She grabbed me by the arm, slopping her last drink of the night all down the front of my shirt. "Next year," she said, "we're going to show 'em who's boss next year. Promise me we'll shut up that trumpet in 14, Alden." I promised to try. That was the best I could do. Paul Massimo had all his resources in Rhode Island, and what did I have? Pop Anderson, owner of a side-of-the-road flea market next to the discount sneaker store. Still, I went to him the next day and explained what had happened. He listened and did me the courtesy of not laughing, although his mouth twitched a few times. I'm willing to sniculate that it did have its funny side, at least until last night it did. But not so much when you had Hallie McCausland breathing down your neck.
"Yes, I can see how that would get your ma's goat," Pop said. "She was always a heller when somebody tried to get the best of her. But for Christ's sake, Alden, it's only fireworks. When she sobers up, she'll see that."
"I don't think so," I said, not wanting to add that Ma never really sobered up anymore. Just went from tiddly to crocked to asleep to hungover and then back to tiddly again. Not that I was much better. "It ain't so much the fireworks as it is that trumpet, you see. If she could shut up that fucking trumpet on the 4th of July, I think she'd be satisfied."
"Well, I can't help you," Pop said. "There's plenty of bigger fireworks out there for sale, but I won't truck in them. I don't want to lose my vendor's license, for one thing, and I don't want to see no one get hurt, that's another. Drunk shooting explosives is always a recipe for disaster. But if you're really determined, you ought to take a ride up to Indian Island and talk to a fellow there. Great big Penobscot named Howard Gamash. Biggest goddamn Indian in Maine, maybe in the whole world. Rides a Harley Davidson and has feathers tattooed on his cheeks. He's what you might call connected."
"Somebody connected. That's exactly what we needed." I thanked Pop and wrote the name Howard Gamash in my notebook. And next April, I took a ride up to Penobscot County with $500 cash in the glove box of my truck. I found Mr. Gamash sitting at the bar of the Harvest Hotel in Old Town, and he was as big as advertised. 6'8", I'd guess, and would dress out around 350, as the hunters say. He listened to my tale of woe, and after I'd bought him a pitcher of Bud, which he drank down in less than 10 minutes, he said,
"Well, Mr. McCausland, let's you and me take a little jaunt up the road to my wigwam and discuss this in more detail."
He was riding a Harley Softail, which is a mighty big sled, but when he was on it, that thing looked like one of the little bikes the clowns ride in the circus. Butt cheeks hung right down to the saddlebags, they did. His wigwam turned out to be a nice little two-story ranch with a pool out back for the kiddies, of which he had a passel. No, Adele, the bike and the pool ain't particularly important to the story, but if you want it, you'll have to take it my way, and I find it interesting. There was even a home theater set up in the basement. Jeez, like crow, I felt like moving in. The fireworks was in his garage, under a tarp, all stacked up in wooden crates, and there was some pretty awesome stuff.
"If you get caught with it," he said, "you never heard of Howard Gamash. Isn't that right?"
I said it was, and because he seemed like an honest enough fella who wouldn't screw me, at least not too bad, I asked him what $500 would buy. I ended up getting mostly cakes, which are blocks of rockets with a single fuse. You light it, and up they go by the dozen. There was 3 cakes called Pyro Monkey, another 2 called Declaration of Independence, 1 called Psychodelic, that shoots off in big bursts of light that look like flowers, and 1 that was extra special. I'll get to that. "You think this stuff will shut down those dagos?" I asked him.
"You bet," Howard said. "Only as someone who prefers to be called a Native American rather than a redskin or Tomahawk Tom, I don't care much for such pejorative terms as dago, bog trotter, camel jockeys, and beaners. They are Americans, even as you and I, and there's no need to denigrate them."
"I hear you," I said, "and I'll take it to heart, but those Massimos still piss me off, and if that offends you,
It's a case of tough titty, said the kitty.
Understood. And I can fully identify with your emotional condition. But let me give you some advice, Paleface. Keep 'em to speed limit going home. You don't want to get caught with that shit in your trunk.
When Ma saw what I'd bought, she shook her fist over her head and then poured us a couple of dirty hubcaps to celebrate. When they experience these, they're gonna shit nickels, she said. Maybe even silver dollars, see if they don't.
Only it didn't turn out that way. I guess you know that, don't you? Come 4th of July last year, Abenaki Lake was lauded to the gunnels. Word had got round, you see, that it was the McCausland Yankees against the Massimo Dagos for the fireworks blue ribbon. Must have been 600 people on our side of the lake. Not so many over on their side, but there was a bunch all right, more than ever before. Every Massimo east of the Mississippi must have shown up for the 014 showdown. We didn't bother with piddling stuff like firecrackers and cherry bombs that time. Just waited for deep dusk so we could shoot the big stuff. Mind me had boxes with Chinese characters stacked on our dock, but so did they. The east shore front was lined with little Massimos waving sparklers. Looked like stars that had fallen to earth, they did. I sometimes think sparklers are enough, and this morning I sure wish we'd have stuck to 'em. Paul Massimo waved to us. We waved back. The idiot with the trumpet blew a long blast. Wah! Paul pointed to me as if to say, "You first, Monsieur." So I shot off a pyro monkey. It lit up the sky, and everyone went, "Ah!" Then one of Massimo's sons lit off something similar, except it was brighter and lasted longer. The crowd went, "Ooh!" And off went the fucking trumpet.
"Never mind the funky monkeys or whatever they are," Ma said. "Give them the Declaration of Independence. That'll show 'em."
I did, and it was some gorgeous. But those goddamn Massimos topped that one, too. They topped everything we shot off. And every time theirs went brighter and louder, that asshole blew his trumpet. It pissed off, mind me, no end. Hell, it was enough to piss off the Pope. The crowd got one hell of a fireworks show that night, probably as good as the one they have in Portland, and I'm sure they went home happy. But there was no joy on the dock of the Mosquito Bowl, I can tell you that. Ma usually gets happy when she's in the bag, but she wasn't that night. It was full dark by then, all the stars out, and a haze of gunpowder drifting across the lake. We was down to our last and biggest item. "Shoot it," Ma said, "and see if they can beat it. Might as well. But if he blows that friggin' trumpet one more time, my head's gonna explode right off of my shoulders." Our last one, the extra special, was called the Ghost of Fury, and Howard Gamache swore by it.
"A beautiful thing," he told me, "and totally illegal. Stand back after you light it, Mr. McCausland, because it goes a gusher."
Goddamn fuse was thick as your wrist. I lit it and stood back. For a few seconds after it burned down, there was nothing, and I thought it was a dud.
"Well, don't that just impregnate the family dog," Ma said. "Now he'll blow that bastardly trumpet."
But before he could, the Ghost of Fury went off. First, it was just a fountain of white sparks, but then it shot up higher and turned rose pink. It started blowing off rockets that exploded in starbursts. By then, the fountain of sparks on the end of our dock was at least 12 feet high and bright red. It shot off even more rockets straight up into the sky, and they boomed as loud as a squadron of jets breaking the sound barrier. Ma covered her ears, but she was laughing fit to split. The fountain went down, then spurted up
one last time like an old man in a whorehouse, Ma said, and shot off this gorgeous red and yellow flower into the sky. There was a moment of silence. Odd, don't you know? And then everybody on the lake started applauding like crazy. Some people who was in their campus tooted their horns, which sounded mighty thin after all those bangs. The Massimos was applauding too, which showed they was good sports, which impressed me. Because, you know, folks who have to win at everything usually ain't. The one with the trumpet never took the damn thing out of its holster. "We did it!" Ma shouted. "Alden, give your Ma a kiss!" I did, and when I looked across the lake, I seen Paul Massimo standing at the end of his dock in the light of those electric torches they had. He put up one finger as if to say, "Wait and watch." It gave me a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. The son without the trumpet, the one I judge might have a lick of sense, put down a launcher cradle, slow and reverent, like an altar boy putting out the Holy Communion. Setting in it was the biggest fucking rocket I ever seen that wasn't on TV at Cape Canaveral. Paul dropped down on one knee and put his lighter to the fuse. As soon as it started to spark, he grabbed both his boys and ran 'em right off the dock. There was no pause, like with our Ghost of Fury. Fucker took off like Apollo 19, trailing a streak of blue fire and turned purple and then red. A second later, the stars was blotted out by a giant flaming bird that covered the lake almost from one side to the other. It blazed up there, then exploded. And I'll be damned if little birds didn't come out of the explosion, shooting off in every direction. The crowd went nuts. Them grown boys was hugging their father and pounding him on the back and laughing. "Let's go in, Alden," Ma said. She never sounded so sad since Daddy died. "We're beat." "We'll get 'em next year," I said, patting her shoulder. "Now," she said, "them Massimos will always be a step ahead. That's the kind of people they are. People with connections. We're just a couple of poor folks living on a lucky fortune, and I guess that'll have to be enough." As we went up the steps of our shitty little cabin, there come one final trumpet blast from the fine big house across the lake. "Wah!" Made my head ache, it did. Howard Gamache told me that last firework was called the Rooster of Destiny. He said he'd seen videos of them on YouTube, but always with people talking Chinese in the background.
"How this Massimo gentleman got it into this country is a mystery to me," Howard said. This was about a month later, toward the end of last summer, when I finally got up enough ambition to make the drive up to his two-story wigwam on Indian Island and tell him what happened. How we give 'em a good battle, but still come off on the short end when all was said and told. "It's no mystery to me," I said. "His friends in China probably threw it in as an extra with his last load of opium. You know, little gift to say, thanks for doing business with us. Have you got anything that'll top it? I mean, Ma's awful depressed, Mr. Gamache. She don't want to compete next year. But I was thinking, if there was anything, you know, the topper to top all toppers, well, I'd pay as much as $1,000. It'd be worth it just to see my Ma smiling on 4th of July night." Howard sat on his back steps with his knees sticking up around his ears like a couple of boulders. God, what a mighty man he was, and thought about it, cogitated on it. Judged his way around it. At last he said,
"I have heard rumors."
"Rumors about what?"
"About a special something called Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind,
from a fellow I correspond with on the subject of gunpowder amusements. His native name is Shining Path, but mostly he goes by Johnny Parker. He's a Cayuga Indian, and he lives near Albany, New York. I could give you his email address, but he won't reply unless I email him first and tell him you're safe. Will you do that, I asked? Of course, he said, but first you must pay he big wampum pale face. $50 should do it. Money passed from my small hand to his big one. He emailed Johnny Shining Path Packer, and when I got back to the lake and sent him an email of my own, he answered right back. But he wouldn't talk about what he called CE4, except in person. Claimed the government read all Native American emails as a matter of course. I didn't have no argument with that. I bet those suckers read everybody's email. So we agreed to meet, and along about the 1st of October last year, I went up. Of course, Ma wanted to know what sort of errand would take me all the way to upstate New York, and I didn't bother telling her no made-up story, because she always sees through 'em and has since I was knee-high to a collie. She just shook her head. "Go on, if it'll make you happy," she said. "But you know they'll come back with something even bigger. We'll be stuck listening to that eye-tie cock-knocker blowing his trumpet." "Well, maybe," I said. "But Mr. Shining Pass says this is a firework to end all fireworks." As you now see, that turned out to be nothing but the truth. I had a pretty drive, and Johnny Shining Path Parker turned out to be a nice fella. His wigwam was in Green Island, where the houses are almost as big as the Massimo's 12 pines. And his wife made one hell of an enchilada. I ate 3 with that hot green sauce and got the shits on the way home. But since that ain't part of the story and I can see Adele's getting impatient again, I'll leave it out. All I can say is thank God for handy wipes. CE4 would be a special order, Johnny said. The Chinese make only 3 or 4 a year. And out of Mongolia or someplace like that, where there's snow 9 months out of the year and the babies are purportedly raised with wolf cubs. Such explosive devices are usually shipped to Toronto. I guess I could order one and bring it in from Canada myself, although you'd have to pay for my gas and my time. If I got caught, I'd probably end up in Leavenworth as a terrorist. Jesus, I don't want to get you in no trouble like that, I said. Well, I'm exaggerating a bit, maybe, he said. But CE4's one hell of a firework. Never been one like it. I couldn't give you your money back if your pal across the lake happened to have something to beat it, but I'd give you back my profit on the deal. That's how sure I am. Besides, Cindy Shining Path Parker said, Johnny loves an adventure. Would you like another enchilada, Mr. McCausland? I passed on that, which probably kept me from exploding somewhere in Vermont, and for a while I almost forgot the whole thing. Then, just after New Year's, we're getting close now, Adele, don't that make you happy? I got a call from Johnny. If you want that item we were discussing last fall, he said, I've got it, but it'll cost you $2,000. I sucked in breath. That's pretty steep. I can't argue with you there, but look at it this way. You white folks got Manhattan for $24, and we've been looking for payback ever since. He laughed and then said, but speaking seriously now, and if you don't want it, that's fine. Maybe a buddy across the lake would be interested. Don't you ever, I said. He laughed harder at that. I have to tell you, this thing is pretty awesome. I've sold a lot of fireworks over the years, and have never seen anything remotely like this. Like what, I asked. What is it? You have to see for yourself, he said. I have no intention of sending you a picture over the Internet. Besides, it doesn't look like much until it's, in use. If you want to roll on up here, I can show you a video. I'll be there, I said, and 2 or 3 days later I was, sober and shaved and with my hair combed.
Now listen to me, you two. I ain't gonna make excuses for what I done, and you can leave Ma out of it. I was the one that got the damn thing, and I was the one who set it off. But I am gonna tell you that the CE4 I saw in that video Johnny showed me, and the one I set off last night, wasn't the same. The one in the video was a lot smaller. I even remarked on the size of the crate mine was in when Johnny and me put it in the back of the truck. "Well, they sure must have put a lot of packing in there," I said. "I guess they wanted to make sure nothing would happen to it in shipping," Johnny said. He didn't know either, you see. Cindy Shining Path asked if I didn't want to at least open the crate and have a look, make sure it was the right thing. But it was nailed up tight all over, and I wanted to get back before dark on account of my eyes ain't as good as they used to be. But because I come here today determined to make a clean breast of it, I have to tell you that wasn't the truth. Evening is my drinking time, and I didn't want to miss any of it. That's the truth. I know that's kind of a sad way to be, and I know I have to do something about it. I guess if they put me in jail, I'll get the chance, won't I? Ma and me unnailed the crate the next day and took a look at what we'd bought. This was at the house in town, you understand, because we're talking January and colder than a witch's tit. There was some packing material, all right, Chinese newspapers of some kind, but not nearly so much as I expected. The CE4 was probably 7 feet on the square and looked like a package done up in brown paper, only the paper was kind of oily and so heavy it felt more like canvas. The fuse was sticking out the bottom. "Do you really think it will go up?" Ma asked. "Well," I said, "if ours don't, what's the worst that can happen?" "We'll be out $2,000," Ma said, "but that ain't the worst. The worst would be it rises up 2 or 3 feet and then fizzles into the lake, followed by that young Italian who looks like Ben Affleck blowing his trumpet." We put it in the garage, and there it stayed until Memorial Day when we took it out to the lake. I didn't buy nothing else of a firework nature this year, not from Pop Anderson and not from Howard Gamash either. We was all in on the one thing. It was CE4 or bust. All right, here we are at last night, 4th of July of 2015. Never been nothing like it on Abenaki Lake, and I hope there never will be again. We knew it had been a goddamn dry summer, of course we knew, but that never crossed our minds. Why would it? We were shooting over the water, weren't we? What could be safer? All the Massimos was there and having fun, playing their music, playing their games, and cooking weenies on about 5 different grills, and swimming near the beach and diving off the float. Everyone else was there, too, on both sides of the lake. There was even some at the north and south ends where it's all swampy. They were there to see this year's chapter of the great 4th of July arms race. Itais versus Yankees. Dusk drew down, and finally the wishing star come out, like she always does. And those electric torches at the end of the Massimo dock popped on like a couple of spotlights. Out onto it struts Paul Massimo, flanked by his 2 grown sons, and goddamn if they weren't dressed like for a fancy country club dance. Father in a tuxedo, sons in white dinner jackets with red flowers in the lapels, the Ben Affleck-looking one wearing his trumpet down low on his hip like a gunslinger. I looked around and seen the lake was lined with more folks than ever before. Must have been at least 1,000. They'd come expecting a show, and those Massimos was dressed to give 'em one, while Ma was in her usual house dress, and I was in a pair of old jeans and a T-shirt that says, "Kiss me where it stinks. Meet me in Lincoln."
"He ain't got no boxes, Alden," Ma said. "Why is that?"
I just shook my head because I didn't know. Our single firework was already at the end of our dock covered with an old quilt, had been there all day. Massimo held out his hand to us, polite as always, telling us we should start. I shook my head, held out mine right back, as if to say, "Nope, after you this time, Monsieur." He shrugged and made a twirling gesture in the air, sort of like when the ump is saying it's a home run. About 4 seconds later, the night was filled with uprushing trails of sparks, and fireworks started to explode all over the lake, in starbursts and sprays, multiple canister blasts that shot out flowers and fountains, I don't know what all. Ma gasped. "Why, that dirty dog! He went and hired a whole fireworks crew, professionals!" And yes, that's just what he done. He must have spent $10,000 or $15,000 on that 20-minute sky show, what with the double Excalibur and the wolf pack that come near the end. The crowd on the lake was whooping and hollering to beat the band, banning on their car horns and cheering and screaming. The Ben Affleck-looking one was blowing his trumpet hard enough to give him a brain hemorrhage, but you couldn't even hear him over the gunnery practice going on in the sky, which was lit up bright as day, and in every color. Sheets of smoke rose from where the fireworks crew was setting off their goods down on the beach, but none of it blew across the lake. It blew toward the house instead, toward 12 Pines. You could say, I should have noticed that, but I didn't. Ma didn't either. Nobody did. We was too gobsmacked. Massimo was sending us a message, you see. It's over. Don't even think about it next year, you poor-ass Yankees. There was a pause, and I was just deciding he'd shot his load, when up goes a double gusher of sparks, and the sky filled with a great big burning boat, sails and all. I knew from Howard Gamache what that one was, too, an excellent junk. That's a Chinese boat. When it finally went out and the crowd around the lake stopped going bananas, Massimo signaled to his fireworks boys one last time, and they sparked up an American flag on the beach. It burned red, white, and blue, and threw off fireballs while somebody played America the Beautiful through the sound system. Finally, the flag burned out to nothing but orange cinders. Massimo was still at the end of his dock, and he held his hand out to us again, smiling, as if to say, "Go on and shoot whatever paltry shit you got over there, McCausland, and we'll be done with it. Not just for this year, but for good." I looked at Ma. She looked at me. Then she slatted whatever was left of her drink, we was drinking moonquakes last night, into the water and said, "Go on! It probably won't amount to a piss hole in the snow, but we bought that damn thing, might as well set her off." I remember how quiet it was. The frogs hadn't started up again yet, and the poor old loons had packed it in for the night, maybe for the rest of the summer. There were still plenty of people standing at the water's edge to see what we had, but a lot more was going back to town, like fans will, when their team is getting blown out and has no chance of coming back. I could see a chain of lights all the way down Lake Rod that hooks up with Highway 119 into Pretty Bitch, the one that eventually takes you to TR-90 in Chester's Mill. I decided if I was going to do it, I ought to make a fair show of it. If it misfired, the ones that were left could laugh as much as they wanted. I could even put up with the goddamn trumpet, knowing I wouldn't have to listen to it blow it at me next year, because I was done, and I could see from her face that Ma felt the same. Even her boobs seemed to be hanging their heads, but maybe that was just because she left off her bra last night. She says it pinches her terrible. I whipped off that piece of quilt like a magician doing a trick. And there was the square thing I'd bought for $2,000, probably half of what Massimo paid for just his excellent junk alone, all wrapped in its heavy, canvassy paper, with the short, thick fuse sticking out the end. I pointed to it,
then pointed to the sky. Them three dressed up Massimo standing at the end of their dock laughed, and the trumpet blew. I lit the fuse, and it started to spark. I grabbed Ma and pulled her back in case the friggin' thing should explode on the launching pad. The fuse burned down to the box, then disappeared. Fucking box just sat there. The Massimo with the trumpet raised it to his lips. But before he could blow it, fire kind of squashed out from under the box, and up it rose. Slow at first, then faster as more jets, I guess they was jets, caught fire. Up and up, 10 feet, then 20, then 40. I could just make out the square shape against the stars. It made 50. Everyone craning their necks to look. And then it exploded just like the one in the YouTube video Johnny Shining Path Packer showed me. Me and Ma cheered. Everyone cheered. The Massimos only looked perplexed and maybe, hard to tell from our side of the lake, a little contemptuous. It was like they was thinking, an exploding box? What the fuck is that? Only the CE4 wasn't done. When people's eyes adjusted, they gasped in wonder, for the paper stuff was unfolding and spreading even as it began to burn every color you ever saw and some you never did. It was turning into a goddamn flying saucer. It spread and spread like God was opening his own holy umbrella. And as it opened, it began shooting off fireballs every which way. Each one exploded and shot off more, making a kind of rainbow over that saucer. I know you two have seen cell phone video of it. Probably everybody who had a phone was making movies of it, which I don't doubt will be in evidence at my trial. But I'm telling you, you had to be there to fully appreciate the wonder of it. Ma was clutching my arm. "It's beautiful," she said. "But I thought it was only 8 feet across. Isn't that what your Indian friend said?" It was, but the thing I'd unleashed was 20 feet across, and still growing when it popped a dozen or more little parachutes to keep it elevated while it shot off more colors and sparklers and fountains and flash bombs. It was maybe not so grand as Massimo's fireworks show in the altogether, but grander than his excellent junk. And, of course, it came last. That's what people always remember, don't you think? What they see last? Ma seen the Massimo staring up at the sky. Their jaws hung down like doors on busted hinges, looking like the purest goddamn idiots that ever walked the earth. And she started to dance. The trumpet was dangling down Ben Affleck's hand like he'd forgotten he had it. "We beat 'em!" Ma screamed at me, shaking her fist. "We finally did it, Alden! Look at 'em! They're beat, and it was worth every fucking penny!" She wanted me to dance with her, but I seen something I didn't much care for. The wind was pushing that flying saucer eastwards across the lake, toward 12 Pines. Paul Massimo seen the same thing, and pointed at me, as if to say, "You put it up there, you bring it down while it's still over the water." Only I couldn't, of course. And meanwhile, the goddamn thing was still blowing its wad, shooting off rockets and cannonades and swirly fountains like it would never stop. Then, I had no idea it was going to happen because the video Johnny Shining Path showed me was silent. It started to play music. Just 5 notes over and over. Doo-dee-doo-dum-dee. It was the music the spaceship makes in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So it's toodly-doing, toodly-deeing, and that's when the goddamn saucer caught a fire. I don't know if that was an accident or if it was supposed to be the final effect. The parachutes holding it up, they caught too. And the Hallmaster started to sink. At first, I thought it'd go down before it ran out of lake to land in. Maybe on the Massimo swimming float, which would have been bad, but not the worst. Only just then, a stronger gust of wind blew up, as if Mother Nature herself was tired of the Massimos. Or maybe It was just that fucking trumpet the old girl was tired of. Well, you know how that place got its name, and them dozen pines was plenty dry. There was two of them on either side, a long front porch, and those were what our CE4 crashed into. Them trees went up right away, looking sort of like the electric torches at the end of the Massimo's dock, only bigger. First the needles, then the branches, then the trunks. Massimo started running every which way, like ants when somebody kicks their heel. A burning branch fell on the roof over the porch, and pretty soon that was burning merry hell, too. And all the while that little tootlin' tune went on, doo-dee-doo-dum-dee. The spaceship tore into two pieces. Half of it fell on the lawn, which wasn't so bad, but the other half floated down on the main roof, still shooting off a few final rockets, one of which crashed through an upstairs window, lighting the curtains afire as it went. Ma turned to me and said, "Well, that ain't good." "Now," I said, "looks pretty poor, don't it?" She said, "I guess you better call the fire department, Alden. In fact, I guess you better call two or three of them. There's gonna be cooked woods from the lake to the Castle County line." I turned to run back to cabin and get my phone, but she caught my arm. There was this funny little smile on her face. "Before you go," she said, "take a glance at that." She pointed across the lake. By then, the whole house was afire, so there wasn't no trouble seeing what she was pointing at. There was no one on their dock anymore, but one thing got left behind. The goddamn trumpet. "Tell him it was all my idea," Ma said. "I'll go to jail for it, but I don't give a shit. Least we shut that friggin' thing up." "Say, Adele, can I have a drink of water? I'm as dry as an old chip."
Officer Benoit brought Alden a glass of water. She and Andy Clutterbuck watched him drink it down. A lanky man in chinos and a strap-style T-shirt, his hair thin and graying, his face haggard from lack of sleep and the previous night's ingestion of 60-proof moonquakes. "At least no one got hurt," Alden said. "I'm glad of that. And we didn't burn the woods down. I'm glad of that, too."
"You're lucky the wind died," Andy said.
"You're also lucky the fire trucks from all three towns were standing by," Adele added. "Of course, they have to be on 4th of July nights, because there are always a few fools setting off drunken fireworks."
"This is all on me," Alden said. "I just want you to understand that. I bought the goddamn thing, and I was the one who fired it up. I had nothing to do with it." He paused. "I just hope Massimo understands that and leaves my Ma alone. He's connected, you know."
Andy said, "That family has been summering on Abenaki Lake for 20 years or more, and according to everything I know, Paul Massimo is a legitimate businessman."
"Yeah," Alden said, "just like Al Capone."
Officer Ellis knocked on the glass of the interview room, pointed at Andy, cocked his thumb and little finger in a telephone gesture, and beckoned. Andy sighed and left the room. Adele Benoit stared at Alden.
"I've seen some tall orders of shit flapjacks in my time," she said, "and even more since I got on the cops, but this takes the prize."
"I know," Alden said, hanging his head. "I ain't making any excuses."
Then he brightened.
"But it was one hell of a show while it lasted. People won't never forget it."
Adele made a rude noise. Somewhere in the distance, a siren howled. Andy eventually came back and sat down. He said nothing at first, just looked off into space.
"Was that about Ma?" Alden asked.
"It was your Ma," Andy said. "She wanted to talk to you. And when I told her you were otherwise occupied, she asked if I would pass on a message. She was calling from Lucky's Diner, where she just finished having a nice sit-down brunch with your neighbor from across the lake. She said to tell you he was still dressed in his tuxedo, and it was his treat."
Did he threaten her?
Alden cried. Did that son of a bitch? Sit down, Alden. Relax. Alden settled slowly from a half-risen crouch, but his hands were clenched into fists. They were big hands and looked capable of doing damage if their owner felt provoked. Hallie also said to tell you that Mr. Massimo isn't going to press any charges. He said that two families got into a stupid competition, and consequently, both families were at fault. Your mother says Mr. Massimo wants to let bygones be bygones. Alden's Adam's apple bobbed up and down, reminding Ardell of a monkey on a stick toy she'd had as a child. Andy leaned forward. He was smiling in the painful way folks do, when they don't really want to smile, but just can't help it. She said Mr. Massimo also wants you to know he was sorry about what happened with the rest of your fireworks.
The rest of them? I told you we didn't have nothing this year except
hush while I'm talking. I don't want to forget any of the message. Alden hushed. Outside they could hear a second siren, then a third. The ones in the kitchen, those fireworks. Your ma said you must have put the boxes too close to the wood stove. Do you remember doing that? I urge you to remember, Alden, because I have a deep desire to bring down the curtain on this particular shit show.
I guess I sort of do, Alden said.
I won't even ask why you had your stove going on a hot July night, because after 30 years in the policing business, I know drunks are apt to take any half-baked notion into their heads. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, Alden admitted. Drunks are unpredictable, and those boomquakes are deadly.
Which is why your cabin out there on Abenaki Lake is now burning to the ground.
Jesus Christ on a crutch!
I don't think we can blame this fire on the Son of God, Alden. Crutch or no crutch, were you insured?
Gory, yes, Alden said. Insurance is a good idea. I learned that when Daddy passed away.
Massimo was insured as well. Your mother told me to tell you that, too. She said the two of them agreed over bacon and eggs, that it all evens out. Would you agree with that?
Well, his house was a hell of a lot bigger than our cabin.
Presumably his policy will reflect the difference. Andy stood up. I suppose there'll be some kind of hearing eventually, but right now you're free to go. Alden said thank you and left before they could change their minds. Andy and Ardell sat in the interview room looking at each other. Eventually, Ardell said, "Where was Mrs. McCausland when the fire broke out?" "Until Massimo came to treat her to lobster Benedict and home fries at Lucky's, right here at the station," Andy said. "Waiting to see if her boy was going to court or county jail, hoping for court so she could bail him out. Ellis said that when she and Massimo left, he had his arm around her waist, which must have been quite a reach considering her current girth."
"And who do you think set the fire at the McCausland cabin?"
"We'll never know for sure, but were I forced to guess, I'd say it was Massimo's boys before sunrise. Put some of their own unused fireworks next to the stove or right on top of it, and then stuffed that pearl full of kindling so it would burn nice and hot. Not much different from putting a bomb on a timer when you think about it."
"Damn,"
Ardell said. "What it comes down to is drunks with fireworks, which is bad, and one hand washing the other, which is good." Ardell thought about that. Then puckered her lips and whistled a 5-note melody from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. She tried to do it again, but began to laugh and lost her pucker.
"Not bad," Andy said.
"But can you play it on the trumpet?"
Drunken Fireworks was written by Stephen King and read by Tim Sample. It was recorded by Carlin Daigle at the studio, Portland, Maine. Editing and post-production by Mike Decino for Common Mode. America the Beautiful, performed by Michael Garfield. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Michael Noble. Drunken Fireworks was produced and directed by Christina Zarafinidis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Finders Keepers by Stephen King, read by Will Patton, and Revival by Stephen King, read by David Morse.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.